So I don't know whether the name must have a different option so that I can report to my manager.
No, thank you, Secretary.
I'm of the view that should the committee agree on room 159, that we appoint the acting chairperson. Is it possible that yourself communicate the resolution of the committee that we continue with an acting chairperson of until further notice, until decisions then been taken? Because now, if this is going to do it all the time, we are putting it then to do them, and it's more of a courting exercise. It's my proposal. I don't know what other members are going to say.
Okay. Thank
you, other good members. I will convey anything to my manager. Number two, today we are to elect an acting state. I was asked now from the members, are there any nominations for the agency?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Honourable Chair. Madam Chair, I would like to propose that we allow in this extraordinary circumstances, allow the work of the committee, our work of the committee, Honourable Minor Soma, to be the acting chair until further notice of this committee. Thank you.
We concur.
Thank you, Honourable Member. So now I will
thank you, Ms. Bulela. Thank you, members, and good morning, everyone. We are all welcome to the meeting. I believe all of us, we have achieved the agenda. I would like to take any apologies if we do have honourable members.
From the house in the west.
Oh, yes,
ma'am, can I just, in terms of the agenda, on the agenda there's a point that we must have took the minutes of the previous meeting. I do not recall receiving the minutes of that meeting, but also, Chair, I think the records will show that this committee has not approved minutes for more than 12 months. And may I ask that you, in your acting capacity, see to it that at the next meeting, that before the next meeting, we receive the minutes, all the outstanding minutes, and that we put on the agenda the approval of those minutes, because we have a huge backlog and it doesn't reflect well on this committee. So, thank you.
With that, I think all members will concur on that. In our first meeting, Ulela will request that you both get your archives and give us benches probably for the next four meetings, so we can see how much we will manage. But that's a confidence, because even the decisions that we would have taken, they don't hold water, they cannot take it. So we can't get officials or the department of culture to that. That will continue to control the take care of all government also, but we have to I think that there are no other additional items we'd like to deal with. However, I thought also we're going to flag the issue of the problem or research that particularly the problem for the quarter, incoming quarter for members to look at. Why I'm raising that honorable members is because we're supposed to go for the oversight this week. Unfortunately, with other things that foreseen circumstances, so to say, we couldn't. But I ask that the administration look at the problem and try and keep to the oversight. Because if you must recall, in the last term also we took for an oversight. And we had some other issues to look at, so we said that we must just park it for a while. But I think the necessity that we can also execute our work is reflected as it may.
She just got another topic. According to my information, Honourable Lovemore has resigned as a Member of Parliament. Honourable Annette Lovemore, she's taken up a position in the Nelson Mandela Metro as a councillor. And according to our committee, she's not been informed of this yet. So if we could just ask the Secretary McLean, necessary inquiries where the bottleneck is. Why is it that the flow of that information through to her has not occurred yet? I would appreciate that. Thank you.
I take the first point of in terms of the program of the incoming quarter. Will they adjust it accordingly, members? We all agree on that. So that we can move forward with that one with a common understanding. Secondly, then, I believe that DA has also submitted the name of the replacement of the honourable member as May, so that the administration can be performed. Mr. Kipavela, you've got your hand up.
No.
DA will mostly welcome that. Honourable Kipavela, then I'll come back to you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, for the purpose of the effective communication, I will propose that this committee, now that has been moved as an acting chair for this meeting, this week also have an acting chair, so that the communication remains effective. Because if we don't find you, whom do we speak to? I think as members of the community, of the committee, we need to know where, if we can't find you, who is the next commander online.
Can I suppose that Honourable Ntombela is the acting member until further notice? So that's it. Yeah. Are we comfortable with rules that I think Honourable Ntombela is raising that also according to the new rules that it speaks to that aspect also. So I ask that we are comfortable with that. We have two actors for now until further notice. Is that a fit for these members? Okay, thank you so much. That will bring me back to the issue of abolition. We have received abolitions from both the ministers, Minister Jeff Kajebe and Minister Ramatogi and the Deputy Ayanda Jolo, and Honorable Minister Manana indicated that he will join the meeting slightly late. Manamena. And also we've got another approach which has received. I'm not sure whether I mean you have it, Honorable Boyna, who's a scorer as we speak. Honorable Jordan.
Honorable Mr. Sedaman sent up because he couldn't write. He's asking for the scorer. He thought she was coming here from EFF. I don't know whether she's been with family member or what.
She's a principal member. I'm sure DA wants to offend the central ANC apologizing for EFF.
You're seeing some very strange things nowadays.
Honorable Shedwa from the IP, I've forgotten about him, he also indicated that he's a scorper, and Honorable Mwame is on oversight, he left last night. So he said also he must register his apology. And with the rest, I take those are the only apologies that we have. Never? That would bring us honorable members and colleagues, if I may say that. There is a slight change of the agenda, Sipulelo. I understand that we're supposed to, in terms of point one, the PSC and amendment bill. I, for one, I don't know about other members. I received my consolidated amendment this morning from a teaching home. I'm not too sure if it's because of the strike or what. Other members, if you receive the amendment actually on time, if I should just double check, we know that the staff were, both staff were on strike, and which I'm tempted to suggest if the meeting can allow me to suggest that we defer the matter for our first meeting when we come back from prison to deliberate on the matter. I need somebody to compare or say something different and a view on the matter that is the proposal that I'm making, honorable member. Honorable Zalma?
I think we discussed the matter because I remember at the last meeting I asked for an English one and the council as well. So I would like to see both of them. So I think we can do the first one. Okay.
Will you ensure that?
Will you then ensure that all of us we get the amendment, the consolidated one? Before the meeting, if it could be possible 24 hours before the sitting of the meeting, preferable on Friday, before the actual week sitting of the meeting, it will have members. Are you okay with that? Thank you. Honorable member, this will bring us to DPME presentation. Okay, what's it? I understand we've got the legal services team. We really, really would like to extend our apology. It's just that at the increase of parliament, they moved it towards the other direction. Hence, we couldn't just take this case without formalizing in terms of deferring the matter. Thanks for your support, and we're sure that you will keep the administration. If you have, I think you have done that, they will make sure that in the next meeting you'll be informed accordingly to come and take the committee through the amendments that we've made. Thank you so much. Have a blessed week. Thank you. Good practice will bring us to DPME presentation on the 30 days payment status of this May. To start with, Bulela, I think it's appropriate that we must also, on your behalf, to explain the apology in terms of changing of the agenda. Because we advise by DPME that if I'm correct, that they were not ready with what was scheduled for this week from MPEG. And I'm sure when they did their presentation for those, they will give us a bit of comfort when are we going to deal with that matter, because it's a critical matter when we're going for the applicable answers, which will have the committee, even ourselves, also to engage in fruitfully. Thank you. DPME, can't you sit, or you are seated here? And the other members are right at the back from the same family. PTSA. Okay. You are allowed to sit somewhere around the table so that you see. And we become one committee family, you know.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, good morning, colleagues. My name is Irene Atenja from the DPME. I'm responsible for Outcome 12 and also the day-to-day payment unit within the DPME.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Members, James Staffan Zane, also from DPME, also assisting in 30 days amongst others, as well as impact systems. Maybe just to say we would be able to present impact on in October next month. Thanks to the committee. Thanks.
Chairperson, as you indicated earlier on, we'll be making a presentation to the committee on the day-to-day payment of invoices.
We have prepared two documents for the committee, that is the presentation, and we also have a report. I spoke to our colleague, the secretary, this morning to make sure that the report has been circulated as well. It supports the presentation. And through you, Chairperson, would like to make a request that we deal with some of the slides in the presentation through the report. And the reason why we're doing that is to give committee members a better picture in terms of the performance of the department, so that when we say so many invoices and to these values, we are able to plot the departments and their performance, and we are able to see who is paying and who is not paying. So I think we can now take the presentation. Basically, we'll take you through the analysis of the payment of suppliers within 30 days, and we'll take you through the progress that has been made by the 30-day payment unit in dealing with this matter. In that part as well, we will deal with a feedback to the committee in terms of the work that has been taken forward from the public hearings that were conducted by the committee last year. In August on the delay payment, and we'll just highlight some of the impact of non-payment and the challenge that we are picking up. So very briefly, in terms of the legislative and policy background, we feel that this area has been exhausted. Departments are very clear in terms of what is expected. We don't think that there is a need for more guidelines or policies. The PRM is clear, the Treasury regulations, Cabinet has made a lot of statements, and instruction notes have been issued to departments on the payment suppliers. And then the other issue that we're highlighting very briefly, Chairperson, is the role of the small business into the economy and what we envisage in terms of the NDP, in terms of job creation and how this sector can really help us, but also to say that in light of the fact that suppliers are not being paid, therefore we have a challenge in terms of achieving the broader objectives of government. Chairperson, from now on, I would like us perhaps to focus on the slide that we have up there is on the exception report in terms of a 30-day payment. So departments are expected to submit their exception reports to National Treasury to say how many invoices have been paid to what value. So there we are seeing improvement in terms of department submitting those reports. But from now on, Chairperson, if you allow me, I would like members to focus on the report itself and perhaps go to page 2 of the report, where we can begin to deal with the analysis of the data. So if you're looking at page 2 of the report, we're looking at how DPME is monitoring the payment of the invoices, and we'll start with national departments.
One second, Ms. Ali. I think there is a mistake at the I'm not too sure what happened. Probably you need to also to give it. The report, it will answer. So, Fungi, you know what happens when you deal with this report? You also program the machine to do back to back. It's not auto if you didn't program it to your start. I'm sure next time you'll be mindful of that. Okay, it's because now, sure about that, it's because members were on track and we are going off the ministry to assert. I think it's an oversight from our assistant, the person that we requested. We apologize about that. We are working on that. Oh, you're redeeming it, isn't it? Okay. Yes,
Chairperson. Sorry, Chair. While we are waiting for them, just to I presume what you're going to try is to get it on the screen for us. While we're waiting for that, May I start off with a question? And I'm glad to see that the heading says, you know, it qualifies the question of, I almost want to say, valid invoices. Because my experience has been that quite often suppliers will put in a claim as if certain work has been done. But you then wait for an engineer or a site manager or somebody to sign off that invoice to say that the work has indeed been done. Because obviously the people doing the payment is sitting in the provincial or national head office in the finance department. So my question is just, at what stage is this entered onto the computer system, or VAT or whatever, the invoices? Once it's been signed off by the person confirming that the work has been done, or is there any way in which we can even monitor that process up to that point, where an invoice has been submitted, but the department returns the invoice to say, no, sorry, we still need another signature on this invoice before we can process this. If the lady would perhaps use the time while they're sitting up, just explain that to us.
So, Honorable, they say that he is a best friend of mine, and I know when he gets excited about an item. This item is his baby, but in the meantime, the lady is trying to bring, but I don't know what is happening. I'm not an IT person, I don't know what's going on. Can you just give her a chance to do what the executive is about? Then, with that, he takes the question and puts it down, and then she will answer it. Because right now, you see, he's busy with it. I don't know what is going on with that computer. Now, if she has to answer, you are actually making her to be not oriented, not to focus on what she's doing. But I should know the
question. There's one item which we can discuss with which I think omitted in the meantime. The issue of public service administration filling of vacancies, public service commission filling of vacancies. Members will recall when it was presented to us, we requested the date of over, we requested that let us see the ratified amended, so to say, which was more of a cosmetic corrections of the address, and secondly also the roadmap. I'll request now Julia is working on this technology to take us through that, and I hope you did send to all members the address as per our input in our last meeting, and also the program that we've made, so that we make sure that also we disclose with the point so that the address can start running. If members they don't have an issue, I'll ask him to proceed. Julia, thank you.
Alright, okay, good morning, honorable members. Thank you, Chairperson. We have distributed this advert to all the members, and it looks different from the one we presented in our previous meeting. The reason being, especially with regard to the requirement, if you can check this advert, the recent one that will be published this weekend with the old one, it differs only on the requirements. We got an advice from legal service with regard to the committee or us specifying the different fields or profession for the commissioners, of which the constitution itself, it does not specify who is fit and proper to be the public service commission. And we also requested the legal service to then clarify us in terms of what does the fit and proper within the context of public service commission means. And then I've even circulated the opinion to all the members, I think yesterday. So I hope members have received that. So the advert should go out without specifying any requirement in terms of public administration or whatever. So it's open, then it conforms with the constitution requirement. So we don't have to specify a qualification. So it will go like the way as it is. On behalf of the committee. But the other technical issue that I was discussing with my manager, she requested me to request from the portfolio committee members allow the address to go out, because all the address of committees, they go out in the name of the chairperson and the committee. So in the absence of the chairperson, we can, if the committee agrees, we can use the current acting chairperson on the asset. So that's what has been requested to convey the message so that we can clarify to all the members of committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, I don't have a problem with the app, except that you just need to do just one question. The way you said in bucket 3, just put an F on post. Alright? And then, you are closing on the 30th, yes, is that right? So, and the question is, for how long is it going to run? I mean, give us exactly the procedure, because now, us as a community, what we used to do, we used to fix each party, we nominate a member or members to form a shortlisting panel. So without knowing whether you're going to run it for, I mean, once you have received it, once you put in the closing date, is it going to take 3 weeks, is it going to take 2 weeks, so that we are able to adjust ourselves, because remember, when you come back, there's NTBS which you need to work on it, and there's this which you need to make sure that we are to process and finish it. So give us a clear indication as to how we must handle this issue.
Well, I thank the Honorable Tumazana for that. In fact, I nearly forgot. There's a program that we have also circulated to all the members in terms of our roadmap towards filling this position. The advert will run for 2 weeks, and it complies with the legal framework. From this weekend on the 16th till the 30th. Well, as normal, as you said, Honorable Tuwadana, we are requesting from members from different parties then to give us the names of people, of members, not very sure, people, of members who will then be part of the panel or a subcommittee to appoint for this particular position. Maybe, because if you check on the program that was circulated, we will be doing the shortlisting on the 5th of October, of which it will be during recess period. So we are humbly requesting honorable members to submit the names of those who will be part of the panel to appoint. And then on the 5th, after the 5th, because of, if you remember the process of the NYDA, Parliament now, we are forced to do a security check, the verification of qualification. And normally the process takes long, especially with respect to the security check, but it's not done in-house, it's done outside by the police. So no, the process normally takes almost 2 weeks. So from the 5th up until the 14th, then we'll be giving that space for security check and verification of qualification. And we then propose that on the 26th of October, that when then the committee will receive a report on the security checks and verification, and then we'll have an interview of candidates. But in between the 14th and the 26th, after we have received the report, then we'll come in. If any person that has been shortlisted and found that does not meet the requirements in terms of that it's not fit, I would say, it's not fit to be appointed, then we'll let the committee so that the decision can be taken before the interview if we have to replace such a candidate who didn't pass the security check and verification of qualification. So then that's the process. And then on the 27th, we'll deliberate on the report for the appointment for the recommendation of the candidate to the House. Thank you,
Honorable. Honorable members, that's a suggested program, but I'm sure members also, we need also to upscale our performance. We're just coming from a double T process, which was also very thorough in terms of its billing. So we must also ensure that we follow the legal up to the T, whatever processes, so that also we don't find ourselves wanting in the process. So I'm requesting to that we must make sure that any assumption that maybe, as you're saying, the legal requirement of 15 working days if we are sure on that one, we are fine with that, and all as it may, and also the composition of the members of the, let's call it subcommittee of the portfolio committee. Members, are we fine with the proposed date and the roadmap as it may? May I take Honorable Velma and also yes, for now.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just checked, in terms of the parliamentary schedule, we're coming back on the 11th of October. I do not know if the Secretary of the Committee can just check that in terms of those dates, because we're now shortlist, putting the date for shortlist. You know, the Committee is happy with that for the you know, date of the shortlisting, but according to the schedule, we're only coming back later then in October, as I said. Thank you,
Chairperson, firstly, I will agree with the 5th of October, irrespective that we are in the recess. The reason being, we have got time constraints, and vetting, it takes time on its own. So as a result, we don't have a problem. I'm proposing that we have to come back. But however though, I would request that this committee decides as to how are we going to handle, because you quote it like a difficulty, but are we commissioners, they tend to have public interest. And these ones mostly are the public service commissions. Now, up to what level are we going to involve the media? Are we going to involve the media while we are doing our shortlisting from the beginning, or we're going to do that shortlisting of whatever number then we started doing? So I would really request, Chairperson, that we deliberate on that as this committee so that we find one another from the beginning, so that towards the end there is no fight about who's who. We understand the procedure or the process that needs to be followed. This one, okay.
Honourable members, as I was discussing, noting that parliament processes or deliberations are open to media, however, or even public hearings, but also our processes are recorded and they are also televised for 404. But on this matter, I think we must, because the certain levels and activities that we embark on, whom we need also to express ourselves so that we are not taken by surprise, because it's the same as public protector processes, but not quite the same. Although we know that they have set a precedent, but they also outline their own kind of reference, how are they going to. Unfortunately, in Parliament, we don't have a 10-day that guides the committee when it deals with the appointment as a mayor. But probably the rule book, if somebody can just go quickly to the rule book, but I will ask members just to say something on that so that we are all clear in terms of that. And also we don't raise expectations that we might not meet. I can see your smile, Honorable Dawu, you want to say something. May you?
I'm smiling because I'm a liberal. Now, if you're going to have any meeting in a public space, you can't restrict the media. So if you're going to do a shortlisting in an open forum, the media will have to pay. Can you imagine, you know, the headlines saying, you know, the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration barred the media from their mission? You know, you can't do that. So what the committee has to decide is whether that shortlisting is going to be a public process or a private process, and then you can deal with it. But if it's a public meeting, you can't stop the media from coming.
No, let's agree, Honourable Members, that I'm tempted to say that the robustness of the WP processes in terms of involving and subjecting candidates, political candidates, to the scrutiny of the public might not necessarily. Let's continue with the normal way of doing our shortlisting, the process of interviews and all that, as it may. Let's see what I'm just raising it and thinking aloud from the chair. And I'll start with Honorable John Bella, then
Thank you, Chair. I am of opinion that the media can be allowed at a point where we
we're going to conduct the interviews. I think before the interviews, obviously, Chairperson will be giving us a sort of a preamble as to how we arrived at that point. That is when we're going to disclose the processes of shortlisting and so on. But the interview itself, can that be open? I really don't. That's how I feel about it. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Chair. I think as legislators, we need to be consistent. This Parliament has sent a president. Even the intelligence, the committee that are sitting. The media was there when they doing the statistics. They tried the names on the paper. They said certain shortlisting. I think what we need to decide and take as a resolution in this committee is to say which level of shortlisting are we involved in this? Because there's a first time where there's a hundred and have something tied. Which then they need that they come, even walking, but you can't say they mustn't come. They come and just walk out because they realize that it's a very boring, but it's just, you know, we start in scoring, start in shortlisting, then we come maybe with the 15 or 20 people, then we just start to be interested. But I'm suggesting that this continues to take a resolution, Chairperson, that at what level are we involving the media? It has to be our resolution, so that at the end of the day, it becomes collective.
Chair, sure, please, I continue. We cannot take a decision in this forum about when we allow the media to know what we're doing. It's a dangerous thing. Please don't do it.
No, Honorable Dawe is not here anywhere. I don't say at what level to involve the media. I am saying at what level of shortlisting. When he comes with about 2,000 candidates, applicants, and the media is interested, you can't stop the media. This is what I'm saying. If it wants to walk in, they can walk in. You don't have a problem. It's a public thing. They can walk in. So I never said at what level you involve the media can be involved in whatever level. All what I'm saying is that we need to agree as this committee. So that must just listen well to what I am saying. We need to take a resolution that the media is a transparent process. They need to be involved whether in whatever initial stage or whether we finish, they have to be there.
Unless I'm misunderstanding, what are we discussing?
It's not too far from each other.
No, I don't understand. Leave the media out of it. Let's make a decision when we're shortlisting, how we're shortlisting. They will know, they will come or not. It's not a decision for us to make whether when we do involve the media. The media are involved at all times, all the time. We are a public institution.
And students, then we
should
sum up with
later. Honorable members, all the meetings of the portfolio committees of Parliament, they are open to the public. So even when we shortlist, we'll make sure, because we do have a communication officer who's assigned to the portfolio committee, will make sure that we convey the message of the agenda and to him the day when we shortlist, so that if members of the media, they are going interest to come, then they can come. But the meetings, all of our meetings are open to members of the public.
Yeah. It is not the impression must not be created that ANC is opposed to the media. Media being present here. We are open for the media to be present here, and we are the candidates that the media should be involved in liberation. So we have no problem with it. I think we must semantics and all that here, you know. But we don't have a problem with the media being present.
Can we, honourable members, proceed with that understanding? I thought honourable members were saying, like how I said earlier on, that the WP processes, they had their own roadmap in terms of how far and they're going to strike in terms of their transparency and all those things. If there are any issues that we felt that probably need to help them a little bit. But anyway, we're moving forward that
it will be business as usual in terms of interviewing processes as how the permit conducts its business in any way. Okay. Honorable members, GA, in terms of the composition of the committee, I understand it has got 7 members, that will bring it to 5, I mean. And just to come through so that I'm correct with the number, I might not say the correct today.
Honourable members, just that I don't have the spreadsheet that I was working on in terms of the composition, but this time, if you remember previously, when we were filling some of the some of the commissioner position, our process, like especially with the minority parties, we were not inclusive enough. But we have learned from the public protector interviews that all political parties, minority, and the official opposition parties, they were part of the process. So this time we are trying to emulate what the public protector panel has done. So all the parties will be part of this panel. African National Congress, it will have 7 members. And then we've got Democratic Alliance. African National Congress will have five members on the panel. And Democratic Alliance will have 1. And then we've got Economic Freedom Fighter, it will be 1. And the Ingata Freedom Party, 1. And then National Freedom Party, 1. So that's the composition of the team.
Thank you, Chair. We accept that composition. Can we start putting the names forward, or when would you like that to be done?
If we are ready now, we will appreciate that so that we can discuss with the members. Yes, I can see that. And
Chair, from the Democratic Alliance, the first member would be myself. If there's an alternate member, Honourable Mukhtar.
And the ANC, Honourable Dr.
Honorable Deaths, 1. 2. Honorable Darini, 3. The third one would be Honorable Lizoma. The fourth one would be Honorable Nyami. Boy. Are they five? Yeah.
Are
they five?
You're saying
they are
five, but you
have to repeat the name. Also, that's Honorable Jeff. Honorable Mansalini.
Yes.
Honorable Soma.
Yes.
Honorable Nyami.
And I'll add that nobody should claim that they didn't receive the invite and notification. I must make sure in all whatever form that you communicate with us, everybody knows. Because we can't be sitting in a meeting where people say we didn't know and what. Honorable, Subasa.
No, Chairperson, I'm just for an alternative member in case of anything happens. Can I nominate Honorable Velma, please?
Honourable members, I think we have done standing work on this one. The advent will go out on the 15th, which is Friday, then the advocates will unfold and also the desk office work. In terms of also advertising, let's follow the protocol in terms of the newspapers. Don't just advertise on Isolev, which is more catered and debit orientated. So it must be national, as normal as it may be. So that there are no question marks in terms of that we limited the advert.
The last thing, honorable members, this time the address has been translated to all official languages, and we are hoping that it will be published in local languages, especially where those languages are spoken.
Thank you so much.
We're
back to you, Irene.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. We have tried to get the document on the screen. So what we're going to do now is we'll take you through the analysis of the performance of the departments in terms of how they are doing with payment of suppliers. We'll be giving you data at the end of June, which is the end of the quarter of 2017. And we'll start with the national department and we'll take you through to the provincial department. So we will start with invoices that are paid after 30 days. So these invoices have been paid, but they have not been paid on time. So we are worried, we are happy that they have been paid, but we are worried that these departments are not complying with the 30-day payment period. So they could have been paid on the 31st day, 32nd day, so on and so on. So if you look at the screen and you look at the table there, you will see that in April, national departments had 11,000 invoices to the value of 327 million. Paid after 30 days, and then in May there was a spike there. We moved from 11,000 to 20,000. However, the value came down a little bit there, and then in June there was a reduction, a slight reduction in terms of the number of invoices. However, the values went up. So basically, what we're saying here is that in terms of the number of invoices, there is a bit of a fluctuation. And then what I wanted to show members. It's this table. I'm not sure whether I'll be able to get the whole of it on the. It seems like I won't be able to get the whole of it on the screen. But in essence, what we're saying is that the picture is not that doom and gloom. So if you look at the table, unfortunately, the page is not in the report. We have got about 23 departments that have demonstrated improvement in the payment process of the invoices within the first quarter. So if you look at the beginning of the quarter and the end of the quarter, those invoices have gone down. However, we are also very much heartened by some of the departments that have maintained a zero compliance rate in terms of having invoices. So at the beginning of the quarter to the end of the quarter, they paid all their invoices on time. And if you look at this screen, we're talking about departments. If you can see, for instance, international relations, planning, monitoring, and evaluation. You have, if you go down, public register and administration, GPSA, and so on. So those departments are maintaining a clean record in terms of payment of invoices. However, we are worried about the 17 departments that have shown a downward trend in terms of the payment. So those will be others on the other side that are doing great. So those departments from the beginning of the quarter to the end of the quarter, they have paid more invoices at the end of the quarter from what it was at the beginning of the quarter. And what we're saying here is that you have a couple of these departments, and these are the departments that are shaded. So if you look at the bottom there, you have the Office of the Chief Justice and Judicial Administration, Water and Sanitation, Rural Development, you have got Agriculture, Police, Justice and Constitutional Development, IT, Defense, Public Works, TMTE, Home Affairs. So those are the departments in this quarter. They have paid their invoices, but they did not pay their invoices on time. But because the ones that I've spoken to are the ones that have contributed to the total amount of 17,000 invoices at the end of June. So if we move over, we're going to talk now about invoices that are older than 30 days and not paid. So here we are talking about from the beginning. I just want to enlighten a little bit. From the beginning of the quarter, we had 9,000 invoices older than 10 days and not paid. In May, they went to 12,000 invoices. In June, they still remain at 12,000. And this is still for national departments. The value there for the first quarter, for the first month of the quarter, was 499. There was an overwhelming improvement in the second month, where we had invoices to the value of 55 million rand over 30 days and not paid, and then it went up a little bit with 7 million at the end of the quarter. Again, we want to show you where the problem is. So if you look at this table, you will see that if I run through, you will see that most of the errors are over, which is showing that it's not all invoices, all departments that are seeking invoices, invoices that are not paid. It's just a couple of departments. And specifically, if you look from the bottom again, you find that the Office of Chief Justice and Judicial Administration is determined again, as we said earlier on invoices paid up 30 days. Water and sanitation is there again. Sorry, I just moved a little bit. You have got Justice and Constitutional Development is there again. We spoke about it earlier. You have got Public Works and CMTE. We spoke about it earlier. So I think the picture is beginning to emerge where is the problem in terms of the payment of the invoices. And as you look at this picture, you will see that we have got quite a number of departments that are sitting with 00. So these departments don't have invoices that are older than 30 days and not paid. You'll see a number of them, and even when I go up again, there is a department sitting with 00 invoices that are not paid. So we're struggling with just a small number of departments that are not paid. So this is the picture at national department, and I think I have also highlighted where the challenges are in terms of the payment of the invoices. We'll come to some of the interventions that the unit is doing to assist this department. Person, if you allow me, I want to do the same again for the provincial departments. In terms of the provincial departments, when you look up at invoices paid after 30 days, from April to June, you can see that the invoices are going down from 38,000, 34,000. We are now at 29,000 at the end of June, or we were at 29,000 at the end of June. If you look at the business there again, you'll see that we're at 2 billion, going down 1.8 and 1.8. So where is the problem in terms of invoices paid after 30 days? In the provinces, you would see that only three provinces have made a little bit of progress in terms of the payment of the invoices paid, the those that were paid after 30 days. But we still remain very much... Okay. Okay. Thank you, Tatenson. So whilst there has been some progress in other areas, we remain concerned that the number of invoices is still very high. I mean, if you look at, for instance, Eastern Cape, we're sitting at 7,000 invoices. If you look at Gauteng specifically, we do say here that they have made progress, but we are concerned about this kind of progress. They moved from 18,000 invoices, sitting at 6,000 invoices. So they've made huge progress, but if you look at the column, the right column, 6,000 is still too much, second to the Eastern Cape. So, and we also really, we appreciate the efforts that is being made by Mpumalanga province. We'll see that although they went down a little bit with a couple of invoices, but in April they had 13 invoices paid after 30 days, and in June they had 17 invoices, the whole province paid after 30 days. This is very good progress. Okay, thank you. And then we move on to invoices that are older than 3 days and not paid to the provinces again. Here we're saying that at the beginning of the quarter we had 50,000 invoices, they've moved to 43,000 invoices, went down again to 39,000 invoices. And the value thereof is 3.8 billion, it went down to 3.5 and then it further went down to 3.3 billion. So the next table is the picture in terms of the provinces. Again, we are very much worried, although the arrows show green in terms of the number of invoices that we had at the beginning of the quarter and at the end of the quarter, but we still feel that these invoices, they are too much. For instance, if you look at Eastern Cape, they had 9,000 to 8,000 invoices. They have reduced just a little bit, but 8,000 is still too much. If you look at housing, we are very much worried and very much concerned. They had 23,000 invoices. They've moved to 18,000. It's progress. But we want to see really a lot of improvement in this area. And talking about provinces, what I need to mention is that what comes across all provinces is that your provincial departments of health, education, and public works are the ones that are sitting with the bulk of the invoices across all provinces. So if you drill down to a particular province, you'll find that the problems are more at your health, your education, and your public works, obviously with other departments in the various provinces. So as we're sitting here today, the DPME unit, which is partners, is importing a province. Meeting with education, with health, with safety, and infrastructure and development to deal with this issue, but we'll talk more on that again later. So, Chairperson, from here, if you allow me, perhaps I can go back to the slide. We'll talk about the work of the unit and what it has done in terms of the work of the public hearings and the other issues. Just on the work of the Portfolio Committee, you would recall, Chairperson, that on the 15th of August last year, the Portfolio Committee hosted a public hearing where it invited service providers to come and talk to the Portfolio Committee about issues of payment of invoices. What we received, having been part of those, part of the public hearings, was that we had 12 submissions made by the service providers. We have followed up on those submissions to find out what are the issues. I need to indicate that not all the submissions were about complaints. There were a couple of people who attended the public hearings who raised some suggestions and so on. For instance, there was a gentleman called Sibusiso Magwaza who came to the public hearing, and his contribution was to say that government must hold lazy public servants accountable. And the other one was Mr. Dugraff, who applauded the committee and so on. So out of the 12 submissions, we have managed to get four service providers to be paid their invoices. And that was the gentleman from the MNO group. There was a gentleman called Michael Santa. He has been paid. Ms. Ndisiwe Mbete was very vocal at the public hearing. She has been paid. Dr. Richard Tenner as well was very much vocal at the public hearing. We followed up with the institutions that were owing these service providers, and all of these four have been paid their money. But also among those that came to the public hearing, Chairperson, I just want to highlight two of them that when we made follow-up with them to say, you went to the public hearings, you had complaints, can we assist you? And they were reluctant to give us information. And this is one of the things that we're picking up when we're dealing with the service providers. And Chairperson, if you allow me, I really just want to take you through some of the things that they are telling us so that you know the feeling of the people out there. So the gentleman from the Ocean group said to us, I quote, however, we have a legitimate concern that the individual responsible for the late payment will strongly object to interventions as it could reflect badly on their commitment to pay. As a result, this has got the potential to compromise further business with the entities involved who may feel that we have now reported them to higher authorities. So you could see that this service provider had some concerns that if they give us information and we approach those institutions, they might not get the business. And then the second service provider who did not give us information, because we required this information to go and say, here is an invoice, the person has done the work, you have not paid them, this is the name of the person, this is the evidence. So it's difficult for us to approach a department or an agency if we don't have anything substantive. So the second service provider said to us, Unfortunately, it will again require an employee from my company to spend hours completing paperwork, searching, scanning, copying, compiling, and submitting documents rather than being productive in the business we are in. This is at the core of our complaint. That was the gentleman from Sim Mining Consultants. We begged him to say, please, can we help you, give us the information so that we know who we should approach to get you paid. To date, they have not given us anything. So basically, that is how we have pushed for to assist those service providers that came to the public hearing. And Chairperson, if I can go back to the presentation very briefly, here we're just highlighting, I'm not sure whether they... Here we're just highlighting some of the impact of the non-payment and on small business, their cash flow problems, the fact that some of them have been forced. We have got evidence, some of them that have been forced to close down, there's been retrenchments. One gentleman sent us a letter, as we're busy trying to help him resolve his case, where the office of the sheriff said to him, if this money is not paid by this date, we're going to come in and report this all your stuff and so on. And unfortunately, on that one, we were able to get the department to pay, and then we were able to save him. So these are some of the impact of non-payment. Now, Chairperson, as I said earlier on, there was this special unit that was created at DPME. It's working in a trilateral cooperation with the DTSA and the National Treasury. So basically, we report to focus on this matter. We also report in the outcome class as one of the impact indicators around the DPME payment. What do we do as the unit? Firstly, we monitor the performance of the departments, as I've given you that picture, and then where we realize that departments are not doing well, immediately we contact the service provider to say, we are concerned with your performance, we feel that you're dropping, and what is wrong, and please pull up your socks, and so on. So we have visited as a team with all our partners. We've been to the Department of Defense, Home Affairs, Water Sanitation, we've been to Northern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal. As I said earlier on, today the team is in Gauteng, engaging with those departments again to find out what are the root causes of non-payment, what assistance. We also bring in the best performing departments as well to say, can you please share your lessons with the departments that are not doing well. So on the other hand, again, as I said earlier on, we'll receive cases from the service providers that would come to us and say, I've not been paid. And then there's a little form where they just give us a bit of information, who has not paid you, what services you have rendered, and so on, and how much is owed to you. So we engage with the department to find out why this service provider has not been paid, and we request the department. It requires a lot of following up as we do this with the department, so we say, please pay, and we give them deadlines and so on. So to date, we have got 102 cases that have been lodged, 47 of them have been closed, 55 are still in progress, and we have managed in the 16 months of the unit to have 177 million paid to various service providers. So one day you have an invoice of about 5,000 rand, today, tomorrow you have got an invoice of 50,000 and 1 million, but we always say to our colleagues that we fight for every invoice with the same effort. No invoice is less important than the other. So we also give some information in terms of the lessons that we get from our MPET process at that slide. And then, Chairperson, these are some of the things that we find a little bit problematic when we deal with this kind of work. So we have got cases that are already in court. So service providers come to us and say, you know, we've taken the matter to court and now we don't even have money to proceed. We find it a little bit difficult to intervene here because the matter is subsidy care, and therefore we cannot intervene and start a parallel process of investigating when the matter is in court. So we are not able to assist those service providers. I've spoken to the service providers who are reluctant to give us information so that we are able to assist them. But some of the things that we really experience is when we engage with the department, they'll tell us that the invoice number was wrong,
this and so we don't take the kind, because we feel those are really plain excuses so for not paying. So we, now we're giving you what we feel are some of the reasons why the departments are not paying, and those are the things that we're dealing with when we visit this department. Firstly, we find that there are systematic challenges in the departments. For instance, the IT one. When we went to the Department of Defense, you would recall that as the Department of Defense is the one that is sitting with about 10,000 invoices that are paid after 30 days. So we asked them, what is the problem? Because when we looked at paid after 30 days, they're not doing well. When we look at older than 30 days and not paid, they're fine. So they pay, but they don't pay on time. And what we found is that they don't have, they're still working on the very old FMI system. So when other departments move to bus and location, because they're in the defense industry and so on, they do not get into that. So we are talking to National Treasury that with the ISMS and this DPSA, perhaps could be the higher department. So what we found is that some of their invoices will be submitted in Duwaduwa. It has to get to Devon so that it's captured appropriately. It's paid in Pretoria. It takes quite a lot of time, or else if they had a system, it could actually be captured in Duwaduwa at their base, and then they see it in Pretoria. They know that everything has been verified and so on in terms of the invoice and it's paid. So those are some of the IT challenges. And when you don't have a system of that nature, it becomes more difficult because then invoices that are sitting everywhere. So the department wouldn't know what invoices we have, where these invoices were. Else if you've got a central point where all invoices are coming in, they're captured, then the department is able to track how many invoices at what phase and how are we doing with day-to-day payment. And then one of the challenges again is the issue of financial delegations. When we visit this department, we request them to take us through the process of paying. So demonstrate to us that here is a service provider coming with an invoice. What happens? Who receives the invoice? What do they do? How many days do they sit with the invoice? Next level, who handles the invoice? For how many days? What do they do? So an interesting thing in one department is that we did all this process all along, all the way actually. And when we got to a point where the person who's supposed to do the final sign-off of the payment, the person is on leave, and there are no financial obligations invoice are piled up. So all the other processes have been done. Just as the signature, the person is gone with their signature. So we say to the department, but you can't have this. All people have worked through the maintain, and we have got a problem of delegations where the person is supposed to do their final sign-off, they're not there. So you need to put in financial delegations in place. And obviously there are capacity issues. The non-adherence to supply chain management processes, chairperson, there is a process of procuring that has to be followed, and invoice, order number has to be issued, so on and so on. So what we find sometimes, particularly when we work with the service provider who complains to us, and I can make an example here. And it is, I was given an order number. I was told that I need to cater for 10 people. But what happened is that late in the evening, the official called to say 20 people have confirmed. Can I up the number so that I cater for everyone? But they did not give me a new order number. So they come in the morning, they cater for 20 people. Remember, the order number is 10 people. So the person that gives them instruction is the project manager. They don't go to finance to say, can we amend and make it 20 and so on, because the confirmations are 20. So when a poor lady comes with an invoice, the invoice is 20 people, the order number is 10 people, then we have got a crisis. When they're supposed to be paid, people are ducking and diving. The people that buy SCM says, no, we ordered for 10 people, we did not want 20. The other one says, the product manager then is left stranded. So the service provider, they're not assisted. So I need to say here that we have got two types of financial CFOs. So you've got the CFO that says, I'll incur regular expenditure and I'll discipline the person and I'll pay the service provider. Because even if I was to reverse the situation and study that, this is the service provider that I would have given the work to do to cater for 20 people. Then you have got another, and we really appreciate this because they are more developmental. They accept that they have consumed the services, so they will render and to the quality that is required. Then you have got other CFOs who say, no, I want a clean audit. That's my goal. So I'm not interested. We ordered for 10 people, and she decided to do for 20 people with there. So we're really struggling with that.
And then, Chairperson, if you allow me, I just want to go back a little bit because I'm just remembering something. On the cases that are in court, we have approached the Office of the State Law Attorney because we have realized that some of the case, government is represented by the State Law Attorney. And we have realized when we followed up that some of the cases, they eventually settled out of court because government does not have a case. I'm not saying all of them. Because government does not have a case. So we're saying to them, before you jump on these processes and so on, can we work with you just to find out precisely whether this should have gone to court or there was a better way of doing it? And because one of the things that we're also picking up from a report that was done by PC is that some of these cases, we actually lose them and there is a lot of money that is being lost there. And we know that service providers don't have money to go to court. So we feel there that sometimes departments be comfortable to go to the agency, the court ruled that we should pay. So it was not us, it's the court, so we had to pay. Instead of really accepting responsibility and say we messed up and we're supposed to pay. So going back on the point that I was making, we also have challenges of lack of documented processes, standard operating procedures. So when we visit this department in a specific area, on we'll do a walkabout and then you can see that not everybody understands what is supposed to be done. So we said to them, can we map out a process for you where you would understand that when an invoice comes in, everybody knows, even a person that is employed tomorrow, you take them through this SOP and they are very clear in terms of what is to be done. For financial management, I'm sorry to say this, but we have got departments that when we approached, they told us that we don't have money to pay the service provider. So here you can see that there is a problem in terms of managing the procurement plan against the expenditures. But we are working with those departments to say, please find a way and pay these departments. Construction agreements, again, it's one of the things that we experience, the manner in which we craft our contracts, and the nature of the business people, really a small business. They are not like those that are sitting in posh offices who have got lawyers who receive the contracts and so on. So at some point when the invoices are supposed to be defined that there are disputes, people are not agreeing and so on. And also we should not rule out the issue of the bad culture. You know, some invoices are just sitting there because somebody says, you know, I want to have more on my table, then I can push them. There is just no reason the invoices are not paid. And I think there we cannot rule out the possibility of corruption and so on. The issue of subcontracting, so you've got service providers who have not contracted with government. They're contracted with other service providers, but the main contractor doesn't pay them. So we find ourselves having to talk to the main contractor and we're going to talk to the department to say, please be aware that your main contractor is not paying the subcontractor. Because this is government money and these are the people that are actually delivering for us. So if the main contractor doesn't pay, we are worried that the department should know about it. So on this slide, Chairperson, we're just highlighting some of the feedback that we get from the service providers that we have assisted, where they indicate, one service provider says, we really appreciate what your local government has done for us. We had a lot of ways to tell you how thankful we are. The other one said, we are very grateful for the service that you have done for us. And then the last one is very interesting. He said, on behalf of my company, I would like to take this opportunity to thank the department for resolving this matter. I wish and hope that there has been lessons learned by the municipality. He was put by the municipality with regard to the matter and that no small business should suffer the same fate as we did. As other small businesses cannot last for this long without a payment. Chairperson, I need to indicate that this matter is of great interest to the Minister of Public Service and Administration through the MPSFES written when we reported and we highlighted some of the issues. He has written to the EAs of those departments that are not paid, expressing concern but also requesting that they ask their accounting officers to expedite the matter. And about a week ago, our minister as well was attending an Imbizo in Gauteng with service providers also giving some input in terms of how we're doing and assuring them that government is working on resolving this matter. Unless I've left anything from my colleague, this is a payment email address that we have. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable members, here's the presentation. It seems like we're moving towards the right direction, although there's some tweaking that needs to be done, and also probably a need also to say we might call the correctional services. If we recall, also we invited correctional services last year, and they indicated only trustees picked up, and they said they were not aware, although that we blame the same ministry. But other than that, let me allow members to react and comment and say anything they would like to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. I have a number of questions, one which I posed earlier, but can I just say, Chief, I'm grateful that this is getting attention from government, because there's a huge cost to this, not only to the economy in terms of small suppliers that, as one of the responses indicated, you know, can't survive unless they have a cost of cash flow. I know of many people who have said to me, I'm no longer interested in supplying government with services. And, you know, I will not put in a tender for construction work. I will not put in a tender for the supply of photocopying paper or anything like that, because I've had such bad experience from government. So what happens is that the people that do put in this now, they add a huge profit margin because of the discomfort, the risks, and the cost that they've had to experience in the past to get money out of government. And eventually, Ms. Matenga, you said, you know, source supply, they don't have the money, you know, to go to court. But I want to say to you, I think the South African government doesn't have the money to go to court. And you also made a remark where you said that, you know, it's sub judice. But then, in a sense, I was quite relieved when you afterwards said, because, you know, even if something is subjudicated, you can still get to a settlement agreement. And it seems to me that is what has happened in a few cases, and it's something which I personally believe our government is not emphasizing enough. We say once a person has served a summons on us, we say it's subjudicated, now we see it in court, which is actually the worst option. And if we can get settlement agreements, all that we're doing is we're filling the court rolls and we're causing backlogs in our courts, and the legal profession is the only profession that's smiling in this role. If you would just allow me a few questions. The first one is, and thank you so much for following up on those people that came to the public hearings. It was really heartwarming to hear that. But you've said four of the 12 has been resolved, two have refused to cooperate, or you were reluctant, I think is the word you used, to cooperate. My question is, and the other thing is, what happened to them? Then the second thing is, you've said service providers communicated to you that they are scared for future business if they now make waves in terms of late payments. I was shocked to hear that, because no decision on getting a contract with government should rely on good relationships or nepotism or anything like that. It should rely on valuable money, on your paperwork, on your price, on your past experience of the quality of the service that you've rendered. And I would really appreciate if the DPME can dig a little bit deeper. Why is it that suppliers are scared to raise issues of late payment, non-payment, etc.? Then, can I just ask, and my first question you will remember has to do with, when do we register an invoice? Because I fear what happens, and we refer to that, public servants sometimes are on leave. And I'm afraid that the inbox might just be filling up with either electronic invoices or printed invoices. And how would we know, you know, about such an invoice? Because what my personal experience has also been that when those people come back from leave, they say, oh, sorry, please resubmit your invoice. And also people have said, but I had to submit the same invoice four times before, you know, any attention was paid to that. Now, will the system pick up such an invoice that's been submitted, you know, 2 months after the original one that's been submitted? And two last questions. The first one is, we've learned as a portfolio committee a while ago that BAS, the Basic Accounting System of Government, is in need of serious review. is that also, does the IP challenges, you prefer some up to the IP challenges, you could just expand on them, so was the challenge there. And then lastly, I do not see on the website of the DPME this email address that you've got, which seems to me should be one that can really make a huge difference to our private sector and stimulate economic growth, etc. in South Africa. Do I just miss it, or are there plans to almost like a helpline, you know, make this better known among providers? Thank you so much.
Right, thank you. Let me just start where he left off, because that's one of the things that I was going to be asking about these cases that are taken to court. I know from experience that people don't go to court, especially small businesses, unless they are desperate and they are frustrated and they think it's the last resort. Now, clearly, the unit is a very good intervention. Its impact did make a difference. People should know that there is a unit they can go when the departments are failing them before they go to court. What is being done by the department to ensure that the small business people and all of those things who need these services are aware of the existence of the unit, and then they can go there before they even go to court? Because I suppose in the first instance, the government doesn't want to be taken to court on every turn, so that would be something they would like to do. And before I forget, Sherry, those even number pages of the report, can we have them? Because they will see these things. The other one is always tickles my fancy. Some of the challenges, the penultimate one, bad culture in the public service. And that's really one of the big problems we have. Question. And you hinted when you were talking about it that possibly somewhere in there's corruption that motivates or triggers this kind of bad behavior. Does the department collaborate, work in conjunction with the DPSA and the Public Service Commission to eradicate, eliminate this kind of bad culture thing that we're talking about? Because I think that's where the problem comes from. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Chairperson. The serial offenders, let's say thank you for the report. The serial offenders, your public works, health, education, and so on. Can you say categorically, since we are aware that they've become serial offenders, what disciplinary measures have been taken against them? And what has been the outcome thereof, knowing that they have been serial offenders? For how long have they been, so to speak? One of my questions relates to the one posed by Honourable Member Stefan Vasilisa with regard to the whistleblowers. Are there any protective measures to service providers that say we have a problem, we are afraid, we are scared, and so on? Do you have a method or a way of protecting them against the would-be offenders? And with regard to the disciplinary measures that you take against some of these people, in what form do they take? What kind of disciplinary measures are there? You also mentioned the question of poor management of finance by some of these departments. What are actually that would cause here? Are we talking about qualifications? What are the constraints actually there? And lastly, I wish you could come out very clearly with regard to litigation. How much expenditure do we incur as government towards litigation? Because obviously we lose a lot of cases, as I just mentioned before. But except how much? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Dalma. Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the presentation. I am very glad to be here, and the reason why is to talk on behalf of Deaf Federation of South Africa. Very unfortunate the Deaf Federation of South Africa didn't know about the public hearings which occurred last year. that very unfortunately, because DEFSA has owned to them by departments, including national and provincial, over 400,000 rand. And 400,000 rand is towards South African Sign Language interpreters. So just to give an example, the department needs sign language interpreters, maybe in Gauteng, but the interpreters there have already taken other jobs. So now the department calls DEFSA, please coordinate the sign language interpreter service, and sometimes DEFSA sends a quote for obviously how much it would cost, but unfortunately the interpreters in Gauteng are not available. So now they have to call someone from outside of the province to fly in at DEFSA's expense so that they can work there. Now, the invoice is submitted, the quote, you know, it's only for the interpreters, but because those interpreters are not available, they have to fly in interpreters, the department refuses to pay for those lines. Because they've already paid for it. Or, the interpreting was already done, the interpreting work was already done, and then they wait on for 30 days, and then DEFSA pays the interpreters out of their own pocket while they're still waiting for the department to pay them back. So keeping on reminding them, and then not only to pay for the sign language interpreters, but also to pay SARS because of the tax, the UI, the pay UI, the pay E, and the VAT. So those things we don't get back because we don't receive the money from the department. So it all adds up. So the sign language interpreters are deaf people's assets. And when the department calls it, so we can't say no, we say yes, we'll go ahead and coordinate the meeting because deaf people need to be visible and they need to have access, but the departments don't pay them. The second thing I want to bring up is when a department closes, what happens to those invoices? Women, children and disabled people's department moved to Department of Social Development. And many of the payments to DEFSA come from this department that closed. And now we ask Social Development and they have no responsibility for that because it's not money that they owe us. And now they, those invoices have not been paid, and I become concerned and worried if DEFSA now being penalized because we depend on money from Social Development. So in the back of my mind, I become fearful. I'm the vice chairperson of DEFSA. So I become fearful because DEFSA's finances. It's not a small business. It's not an SME. It's an NGO. And they don't have the money. And they have to pay these interpreters, and they have to change interpreters. But now the department was closed. So now I'm asking you, now that you are here, I'm asking you for additional help to listen to DEFSA's plight. And another thing, DEFSA also says, by asking why, you know, they give an invoice, why is there so many levels of signing and approvals that needs to be done? The secretary who receives the invoice signs it, and she has to give it to her supervisor, the supervisor has to give it to some financial person, the financial person needs to give it to the DG needs to give it to the editor. Why are there so many levels before an invoice gets approved, and then at the end of the day, their funds don't get paid? So why all of these levels? So I just need your assistance with that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Dalma. Honourable DM, you're mostly welcome. We did receive an apology that you joined us late. We are almost like done, but we might appreciate your presence, Honourable Matamini.
No, thank you so much, Honourable Chairperson. And maybe one needs to take this opportunity to actually thank the ministry. The intervention, like what Honourable Mudal said, is really good. And we just only believe that the message is being taken to the minister. We say thank you for the initiative. Because it can't without small businesses. That's where employment takes place. So if we then the government is able to try and put models to try and deal with those, I think we need to commend that and appreciate and say we hope at least they are left there. We understand that they are seeking you for a job, but at least you know, if you have started something, you know the problem. Then you continue to improve on what you are doing. So we really appreciate that. However, though, I'm glad that the DPSA is here, because the DPSA is going to be able to pay for the site that the mindset is used to come to this meeting, because I have to answer these questions. I might not be here as a person because I'm a team for Scopa. I remember, if it's not that, about 3 years back, where the late minister was there, where we said, is it not possible that they coordinate a tracking system or program, software program? The department must have the tracking software program, where if a service provider A says, I submitted my invoices in July, they just click into the system. The system tells that the invoice is sitting somewhere, because the moment it enters the office, it gets captured. Why is that not happening to DPSA? I'm referring to the DPSA. The DPSA, because that's what the honorable colleague was going to do. So where are we? The monitoring gets the information, they go there because the data is sitting there, but actually the people that are in charge for the public administration, it is the DPSA. Secondly, any sub-delegation. I'm just telling about Jehovah, man. I'm going to power 102. That if Susan is not there, nothing is going to happen. It's sad what I hear from the DME that we haven't done anything about the financial delegation, that if so-and-so is sitting in procurement and they're not there, they should be delegated. They should be delegated. They should some, but indeed we do have social problems, we do have family problems. Somehow, somewhere we are not going to be there. It is a normal thing. But why there's no delegation? Why are we still having the problem? Where is the collaboration between our departments? Why the DPSA is not doing anything about that? You know what has been raised by Honorable Comrade, Honorable Vem, she is my comrade, Elma. It's a very sad thing, because it's not that you're not all about this. See, interpreters are scarce resources. That's why when we buried the former president, President Mandela, we had somebody side by night. Because they are a scarce resource. Now, because they are a scarce resource, can you then ask the DPSA to look at this? Maybe somehow, somewhere, Chairperson, before we go to December time, they need to come back and tell us about what are they doing about this personnel, because they are a scarce resource. See, now I'm meeting the DPSA to pay. May you release me? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Honourable Members. From my side, picking up from colleagues to say, probably in future when you're coming back, one would be much interested to segment it in terms of gender. Your youth and women in particular. I don't want to make suspicions who are the most teams in the space. The other one also is to say, which is a recommendation for ISRG, is to say, can you please approach SG in terms of continuous training, in terms of incapacity and all that, but also I'm sure at a ministry level also, you can also encourage major or prioritized departments which are still using papers. Because with all the so-called public service protests, the banning of offices and all that, then information can disappear. And then a poor person won't be paid. Those are the things that I think also with the IT department of government also, we should start having a deliberate program. In particular also, since we are moving towards the centralized procurement, which has got its own issue, but I'm not saying we must start towards that, but also municipalities and other spheres of government must also get themselves in terms of IT, which is much safer, because we do have also IT language, where you record management. Yes. Because then at least you are granted that if it crashes on site, you are able to also to recoup that information, so that there is a clear paper trail. And I'm sure also DPSA, the serial offenders, can we prioritize those ones in terms of checking the related authority? But some of these amounts are huge. 1.8 million that's a hell of a lot of money that is owed. But also the other one, moving forward to the serious offenders, non-payers of service providers. How much, for an example, your education, how much do they spend in challenging and end up settling out of court? How much do they would have wasted instead of just being writing and paying the service provider? After, of course, following the injection to ensure that the work has been done and it's not shady and all those other things. You may record, then we can sum up. GM, you are allowed to say a word on this one. We're recapping from our previous in August and public hearings, and also up to date what has the department has done in terms of ensuring that we do make a difference in terms of paying for our service providers. And it has come very clearly that there are departments that, as the minister, as the department needs to pay attention to. Your public works is a major driver, which also is lagging behind. Your correctional services also is the, it's a perpetual hatred. Probably we must arrest them instead of the prisoners.
I didn't want to say anything on the thing. I was seeing this, it's really frustrating me, this issue. Are you going to go offer not to speak to your presentation, you know, about personal experiences with us here? As I'm sitting here, okay, I've got so many complaints from members of the public. And as a member of parliament, you feel hopeless because there's nothing I can get to. And the people that are really suffering is these small enterprises, these very, very small businesses, emerging businesses that are really, really, really suffering. And it happened at the provincial department. It's a very low level in the department of procurement that are taking place, you know. And it sort of falls through the cracks, and they don't pick it up. I don't think it can be picked up. And also the local government level, where officials certainly do not pay these people. And it boils down, plain down to corruption, where small persons get pressurized that then act in an inappropriate manner in order to get their payments from the department. That's happening. That's happening on a daily basis, affecting these small people. They will not even talk about it because they feel they will get victimized the moment they start raising it. They will start getting victimized by the department. But it really affects very, very small men that no one speaks about, no one hears about, and it kills them, it destroys their businesses. And it's happening on a daily basis. I'm sorry, I'm saying about of your presentation. But all the people who come to your complaint, I haven't been paid by the department. These guys aren't paying me. And the money is there to spend. Some people are paying, but they're putting pressure on the small business in order to act inappropriately. So it's existed there now. We're going to deal with it. And then you'll find that people are screaming anti-corruption. It's actually not anti-corruption. The minister got nothing to do with what happened in the department. These junior officials are acting in this kind of manner. And it's very hard to prove that they are doing anything wrong. But people speak and say corruption, anti-corruption. This has got nothing to do with that. It's something that you need to try and find ways of dealing with it and how we're going to tackle it at a lower level. I don't know, maybe we should get rid of all these small emerging businesses, but these issues, these problems must be set up where we can discuss it with them, say how to act when you don't get your payment. Maybe create channels for them to communicate directly with us if they don't get their payment on time, but they don't get paid on time. Otherwise, we need 3-4 months for payments to come through. They're not getting their payments 6 months and stuff like that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member. You may respond, the other ones are advised, and I hope you'll carry them through and also communicate to the relevant departments.
And these officials in these departments, you look at all the provinces, there's all these officials that we have met, inherited during the sunset clauses who are serving previously before we can inherit them. They are masters, they are very skillful on how to deal with these issues there. And they have inherited them, not in our officials that we have appointed, not even catered to president, people that inherit them from different provinces. And they are very skillful in doing these things. And they have absolutely no loyalty to no political party, but loyalty to themselves. And that's the whole government continues. Is the thing that they are doing. Thank you.
Thank you. can see you are very angry, and I'm sure that this committee also will deal with the issue of management, because there are managers that need to manage, and they don't have the will. And I'm sure that DPSA, you are going to come back and tell us what are you doing with those serious offenders, because an issue of financial management and management is made, and monitoring thereof. I want to give UNEM a chance, but you are not right from the side, and I'll go that way to just to check all of us so that you are sure that we close the case.
Chair, thank you very much for your attention. Chair, I'm of the opinion that it's not possible from our side to assist the department. By calling this department, inviting this department for, so that we can find out from the real people, you know, so to speak, what the problems are and what is it that could be done to try and improve the situation. But my understanding is that we all have one intention, and that is to eradicate this number. So our calling these people, let's hear what they have to say. Maybe there could be some improvement from their side. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. We will respond to the questions. I will take the first question, then my colleague can also add. The first question that was asked was about the legitimacy of the invoice. So an invoice is legitimate when processes have taken place before we submit the invoice. In other words, services have been sourced in the right way. The order number was issued, the services were delivered, they met the specifications, the invoice itself contains the information that is critical for the payment and is in line with the order number. And when everything has been done in terms of the goods received, the verification sign of it goes into the system, get kept up, then day-to-day begins. But in the world that we're living in, we find that the invoice goes to the project manager. The project manager is in the field, is sitting in the office. The invoice is supposed to go to SCM, not to the project manager, so that it can be kept up. Then the organization knows that it has received an invoice. So that is one of the issues that we are experiencing. A person submits an invoice to Irene because they did a work with Irene, and then I'm waiting for payment, Irene is not there, or she is not submitted to SCM, and so on. And then 30 days go by, and then the invoice is not even found for that matter. So I think what I need to say is that we need to emphasize, and that is what we are doing when we visit this department, to say, please make sure that the project managers don't sit with the invoices. The invoices must have a central point where they are submitted. But also to the service providers to say, when you submit the invoices, make sure that you submit at the right point, which is the department should also educate the suppliers where the invoice is to be submitted. Okay, on the issue of cases being at court and being subjudicated, I just want to share with you one case that we dealt with. So the lady comes to us and says, I have not been paid. The matter is in court, it's not even moving, because I'm being frustrated by the municipality. We're dealing with the municipality here. There are postponements and so on. So we said, look, we can't assist you with this case because it's in court, so we can't start another process where we're investigating. And then in her view, she said, look, the court process is not even helping me because then I'm paying my lawyer and so on. So we said, are you prepared to withdraw the case? She said, yes, I'm prepared to withdraw the case. We investigated the case. We met with the officials of the municipality. And although her lawyer was reluctant, because he is making money out of the process. But we were dealing with somebody who is very strong in character, because she wrote an email even to her lawyer to say, look, I'm handing this over to the DPMA that are going to assist us. And in the course of about a month and a half, her million was paid. And the officials from the municipality were very cooperative, and we were telling them of the professions that are being experienced by this lady. So it also depends whether people are prepared to pull out and their lawyers to get out, because we can't be in talking with lawyers. We want to talk to the service provider, and we want to talk to them, to the institution and involved, because we don't want to get into the legal processes. On the issue of the service providers that came to the public hearing,
Chairperson, I did say that not everybody that came to the public hearings had complaints. So you had a gentleman like Mr. Sibusiso Somagwasa, whose contribution at the public hearings was that please, government should hold public servants, lazy public servants accountable. You have another gentleman whose name was Geograph, and he said that he applauded the efforts of the portfolio committee, and he said in his own experience he has been paid invoices between 8 to 20 working days, 14 invoices. So not everybody brought in, others brought in suggestions and so on. Safe to say that the four were paid and then the other two were reluctant to give us information. On the issue of service providers that are scared to do business or to lodge their complaints, it's a bit of a difficult one because we do plead with them that, you know, the manner in which we also approach the department, we are being honest, I need to be honest with you, when an invoice has not been paid, we are not friendly with the department because we don't understand why the invoice is not paid, and the difficulty that they put in the service provider in. But I guess from their side, they feel that, you know, when the people in there know that they've been reported, they're not doing well, next time they put in a tailor, maybe they just go to ignore them. Perhaps it's a way of them protecting themselves. And I think from our viewpoint, it would be really difficult, I've really thought about this, but it would be difficult because for you to come to us and say, I've not been paid, we need your name, we need the invoice, we need proof, so we can't do that anonymously. So we need the information to say, this is the person, this is the order number, they have done the work. So obviously the department would know who is complaining. But also we do say to service providers, if you feel in any way that we have been victimized out of this process, let us know. We will go back to the department and we will deal with them. And on the issue of the IT, yes, this is a problem in some of the departments, particularly as I said, correctional services, which is not even on bus or even on lorries. We know that in some instances departments will say to us that the bus was down and so on. But we encourage departments to pay even before 80 days. And there are those departments that are able, as I've demonstrated earlier on, that are paying within 10 days, within 15 days. So if you've got a downtime of about 2 days for us, they are covered within that process. But as long as the standard operating procedures and the finances are in order, then they are able to pay. On the issue of the email, we apologize. We'll make sure that it's on our website. But also to say that some of the ways that we have been engaging in making people aware is the fact that our minister and our deputy minister were at the imbizo that happened about a week ago, where we are engaging with service providers to say that here is the PME contact, this email address, and this contact, these are the people that will be helping. But I do agree that probably we need to go out even more rigorously. And then there was a question about the court cases again. You would recall that this unit was established in 2015 April. So we're dealing with cases, some of them that are as old as 2006. 2007 and so on. So the unit was not in existence then. But we still try assist those service providers. Perhaps whilst I'm on this point, I also need to indicate that one of the things that is frustrating us is the Prescription Act, if you would know about that, to say that if you have got a case that you have not followed up in 3 years, automatically it goes out if you've been old. And departments are beginning to hide this Prescription Act, but we are very hard on them today. You have the responsibility. What did you do? You received the services. Do you follow up with the person to say that I need to pay you and you were not available or you did not give me? So you can't just fold your arms and receive the services and then hide behind the Prescription Act. And I think my colleagues here will ensure that the report, as one of the honourable members requested, is made available in full so that some of the pages that are missing could be
could be accessed. On the issue of the bed culture, yes, we are working with the GPSA. I think the unit is working in trilateral cooperation with the GPSA and the National Treasury. That's how it was established. And over and above that, we have decided to also work with the Department of Small Business Development because they're in the area of small business and the CEDA agency thereof. So what we pick up again, and this is what we're saying to CFOs and colleagues in the SCM, that supply chain management is not a back office function. We tend to think HR is a back office function, supply chain management. It's not, it's a front line office of its nature because we are dealing with clients here. So the very same ethos and values of Batwil, they have to be exercised there. So the department is not just supporting line function to execute the mandate, but it's interacting with the public. So when you receive an invoice, do acknowledge receipt of the invoice. If you have challenges anyway, do communicate with the service provider that, hey, your invoice has got this issue or we are not able to pay, but we will pay you on this day so that you don't let people frustrated. And then on the issue of serial offenders, I just need us to be very clear here, particularly in terms of health and education. Health and education is in the provinces. Your health and education national is fine. They are paying and they are doing their work, but it's in the provinces, obviously with your public works and sanitation and so on. And the person asked, I must say that we are really humbled by the suggestion made that perhaps the portfolio committee also calls in this department to come in. We will join in to support the committee in terms of those departments. As you could see, as I said earlier on, we are visiting them. And we feel that once we have visited them, once we've identified the problems, the system should run itself. So it can't be that you want the unit to be sitting permanently in a department for them to pay. So it really frustrates us as well that we spend time, we sit with them, we identify the problem, and then 2-3 months they're doing when suddenly things go back to the manner that is not acceptable. The issue of management of finances is a problem, particularly when it comes to budgeting. And this goes to the fact that sometimes we procure things that are not in our procurement plan. So when we're supposed to be, the money is not there. So how we manage our budget, how we monitor the budget is the problem. When we went to Northern Cape, we sat amongst others with the CFO of Health, who was sitting with our accruals of about, was it 180 million that is owing to amongst them to service providers. So he said, I don't have money. And we asked him, so how did you arrive at a situation where you don't have money? So you're taking on other projects that are not in the project procurement plan? And when it's time to pay, they're not able to pay. So people are not monitoring their budgets, they're not adhering to the procurement. But those are the things that we're also saying to National Treasury, the Accountant General, and the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. Can we really tighten the system so that people do not procure something that is outside of the procurement? Because the reality is that they won't be able to pay. We do not have information with us at this point in relation to the issue of the litigation, but I think that information we can get and provide to the committee in terms of how much I'm spending in terms of defending a department. Chairperson, on the matter that is raised by Honourable here, my request perhaps is that we engage with Honourable and we get all the information and we engage the Department of Women because I believe they're still responsible for paying these invoices. We have had a case where the Department of Local Government and Housing, before it used to be Housing, Local Government and Housing, and somebody did work with them and then in the process it was disinterpreted. But we went back to the Department of Housing and the service provider was paid their money. So I think it would be really, it's a case that we would want to work on and push and see how far we can go. The issue of why do we need so many signatures,
We do need the speed data for checks and balances. So the person that receives the invoices to verify with the project manager, and also in the SCM process, you need people to say, yes, this invoice has been verified, yes, the goods have been received, so on and so on. But that shouldn't be a problem for us to pay in the delays, because when the invoice goes into the system already, the bulk of the work would have been done. So that the amount of time for those signatures really shouldn't take too much. And also when you have got the financial delegation, what it means is that not all invoices have to be paid by the CFO himself. So other officials in the department, if they are delegated, they are able to deal with that. Chairperson, we thank you so much for the suggestions that you have made in terms of approaching the NSG. We are working also with the National Treasury. They have got a program on capacity building for officials in the supply chain management. The issue of, I would like my colleague also to come in, the issue of disciplinary measures. We know that warning letters have been issued to officials in my department specifically. Our CFO is very strict, so you don't pay invoices. I assume that he issues a warning letter immediately, not even a verbal warning. He issues a warning letter, and everybody in the SEM is very much alert to that fact that if I was found to have sat with this invoice, and there are consequences. And people, if you have got a standard operating procedure, as we have, to say that each person in the process is only allowed to sit so many days with an invoice. If you exceed those days, you have to give reasons, and they have to be very valid, and action is being taken. But I cannot really say for all the departments that this is really happening. When we went to one department, we spoke to with the CFO, and he said to us, I'm new in this department, and what I found is that the culture here is that you have to be nice. And I said, you can't be nice when invoices are piled up and they have not been paid. It cannot work like that, because at the end of the day, you remain responsible, and we're going to recommend to the DG that he disciplines you. You are encouraging this kind of behavior. I don't know if my colleague has got something to add, Chairperson.
Thank you, President. I think on the disciplinary action, I think firstly we need to be reminded that not paying somebody a supply within 30 days is a financial misconduct. So it is different. I think the thing about disciplinary action is it can only be applied within the department. So the department officials are the ones to charge and those things. And I think Irene alluded to this. If you don't have, let's say, standard operating procedures in saying how long must I take to do what X, Y, Z, that everyone is there, and you don't have good tracking systems in place, you don't have, let's call it, the evidence or that to actually charge somebody with. So unfortunately, I think it's the weaker departments don't have the mechanisms in place to actually be able to enforce discipline, but as we go along in those things. I think also the other thing when we say poor financial management or cash flow, we're finding some departments already start with surplus because they stop paying or actually a shortfall in the beginning of the year. They start withholding invoices at the end of the financial year because they obviously also run out of budget, and then they process those things come April, May, and that then again eats the money for that year to come. Also in the area of systems, we're fortunate enough the committee is probably well aware of the ISMS process through Treasury and DPSA to provide us with the systems and all these things. But in the meantime, we have found some departments, typically like South Africa, that actually developed their own in-house invoice tracking system. And they track the whole project, so they sharing that with everybody else. So I think as interim, we're saying there is some people, some departments that develop that. I think on the let's call it the culture and how do we manage corruption and those things. I think one of the approaches is also to make sure to try and inform the service providers in what is their right, what is the process and all those things. Because I think also this thing about people being asked to resubmit invoices, people need to know and understand why the officials are doing it. And if they're aware, they can also drive their sort of rights and saying, well, you have to pay me, you have to provide me with all the information. So, and yeah, and I think the cultural thing, it's not necessarily, let's say, a culture of corruption, but it's just a culture of not serving the suppliers, serving the public, and that. So I think there's a much bigger sort of issue to manage. So thanks. Yeah, thanks for watching.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one last thing. I said earlier on, we are working with the Department of Small Business. So one of the things that we have planned is that we will be engaging service providers in one of the interviews that they have where they talk to small businesses so that we can talk about the day-to-day payment and make them aware of the processes that are involved in the payment so that even they from their side, they are aware, like for instance, the issue that I said, a person get called very, very late to say, can you offer more of your services without an amended order number? So that they are aware what are the expectations, they don't get abused by government, and they are right as such. Thank you.
I have a follow-up here. I'm just worried because I thought I had
thank you, honourable member and the House. There were three questions that were posed towards DPSA, and I think partially our colleague on DPME had spoken to that, yes, but just to indicate there's a linkage in relation to an earlier question around the delegations. The two separate acts, the Public Service Act and the PFMA. All financial delegations in terms of PFMA, they're not in terms of the Public Service Act. So anything to do with the ATM as well as the trickery rates in relation to what needs to be done in terms of the PFMA and those delegations in terms of the PFMA. We are responsible for administrative delegations that do deal to the aspects of the Public Service Act. One of the things that we read with Treasury is that the various principles would be contemporaneously consistent for both acts, which means that it limits the amount of people that make decisions. And the best principles are identifying who verifies, who authorizes, who is responsible, who must be consulted, who must be informed, and who executes a particular administrative action. So those would be the same in both of the delegation frameworks for both the financial delegation as well as the administrative delegation. So you would find exactly the same principle with the ICMS pertains. GPSA is only responsible for the HR module of the ICMS, and Treasury, the CPO, is responsible for the ATM module, which would be into tracking of ATM-related matters. So it's completely different. But there's one delivery arm, which is the same for all of us, which is CETA, and CETA falls under the purview of the Minister for Telecommunication and Postal Services. So there's a difference between e-government and e-governance. We are responsible for e-governance, and Department of Technology, Telecommunication Postal Services is then responsible for the aspect of the e-government, which is the system per se. The last question that was posed to us, which we then take back, is the aspect of the scarcity sought around personnel with regards to people that are interpreters. And clearly, there would have to be a review in relation to the classification of jobs that exist within the public service to take cognizance of that particular request. So I will take that back to my colleagues. Thank you very much.
Okay, but DPSA, you are aware that you are responsible for public service as a whole, as to who does what, but also the end of the day, you are the custodian in terms of ensuring that public service, they do what is right and what is expected from them. whether the filter department does it, but also you need to do your piece on that because you're dealing with war bodies as me. So I'm saying we must learn this family of the PME, DPMA, that we are more overall, we are not narrow. So sometimes we get tempted to be only in-house looking when we are looking after ourselves. Because also the issue of which I know is DPMA, but also the issue of your performance agreements and all those things in terms of the beaches and the senior management, you must also pay interest on that one, which also will speak to delegated authority in its totality as a name. Do you want to say something, ma'am, with the glasses? Yeah, fine. Honorable Velma?
Thank you, Chair. Just a follow-up relating to the Prescription Act. I just wanted clarity. If after 3 years you hear from the service provider or you hear nothing from the service provider, it falls away, or as in the case of Desta, who has been following up, calling him for 3 years, does that also fall away in that case? So I just wanted clarity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think it gives us a very good case there if you have been following up, because there has the period of 3 years has how can I put this? Come in. The case must be dormant for 3 years where you have not followed up. In your case, now that you have followed up, it's even better. It cannot fall off. But even where 3 years has gone by, what you're saying is, we're saying to the department, you are not doing the services. What was your role? Did within the 3 years contact the service provider and say, I want to pay you. Give me an invoice or give me your banking details. And tell us that the service provider has not come on board. And you say, that's why I have not paid, because by and large departments don't do that. So in your case, I think we are covered. But as I said earlier on, Captain, I think this is the case that we really want to handle and see how far we can go.
Are you okay? Julia, are you okay? Okay. Are you okay? Honorable Marvin? Yes. Are you okay? Honorable Dombela? Honorable Dumb?
Just a little point, Chair. This is what I wanted to say. That during the presentation, a word was used. It's a favorite word of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Consequences. Yes. And that explains why the DPNE can show those zeros in those charts that we saw. And what they need to do is to find how they can translate that to the other departments. Now, I know the DPME, we've been told, they can encourage, they can cajole, they cannot discipline the people in the other departments, but what they are doing is right. People need to know there are consequences if you don't do your job properly. And that really is the point I wanted to make.
Hey, hurrah, lead by example. Honorable member?
Good question, Mr. Speckle. Glad you used the acronym. I heard him say IMFS. Is it IMM?
Honorable DM, and then we close.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable the members of the portfolio committee and the representatives from the department. I think the first thing is that we take this task very seriously, both myself and the minister, and also encouraging the unit at the PTME to take this work seriously. I think you've seen with Since the establishment of the units, the money that were recovered and the progress that has been made. But I also think that you've seen how, you know, the numbers are actually not really consistent. So the 1 month we think we're making significant progress in terms of the number of invoices paid. In the next month, the number shoot up, and also the amounts there. But we're taking the work seriously because of its link to the economy. It links to jobs. It links to sustainable small, medium, and macro enterprises, because we believe that that's where the solution for dealing with unemployment broadly lies, and that's why we're taking this seriously. We have agreed that after the diesel which took place last week in Gauteng, and as a result of the appeal from those who participated, who were from all over the country, we have agreed that we are going to be taking this throughout the country to engage with small businesses. So it's something that's in the pipeline, and we're also going to be using most of the platforms available for DPME to talk about this and to help resolve the blockages that are there. And thirdly, I think the question of consequences is important. As the Honourable Member Mutau just indicated, and we cannot emphasize this any more than I think it has been. And what we can do is mainly to repeat it. And to understand that not to pay within 30 days is a financial misconduct. And a serious financial misconduct at that. I mean, we, listening to DPME, listening to Statistics South Africa, and a couple of other departments which have been excelling in terms of paying people on time, you realize that you know, it's a combination of factors which I think the presentation has gone through, and we are not only you know, being unfriendly to the departments when dealing with the issue, but I think we're also trying to help them get to solutions. If it's capacity, we deal with capacity issues and all of it. So the unit is not only, you know, carrying a stick around, but also trying to help so that we build that capacity in terms of models that have worked, you know, and all of that. So, I mean, with the little that I've had, I think we're quite happy with the support that the Portfolio Committee is willing to give us in this work, and also to ask the departments which are high on the list to come and make presentations so that we're able to ask questions. I think that would help to achieve, you know, the same goal. So thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you so much, GM. That brings us to conclusion. Just to summarize, we agreed in terms of the TSC processes that will start unfolding as from Saturday, Friday, in terms of advertising, all that, and we add other political parties to give us names. Secondly, we agreed that the minutes moving forward, our next meeting that we're going to see, to take advice of minutes, and we ask the administration to provide us those minutes on time in the documentation, DPSA, DPME. We are saying the latest is Friday, midday Friday, before the sitting of the meeting, than getting them on a Monday. If your documents are coming on a Monday, while I'm still an actor, you must know that you're going to step down, and you are not going to be here. Three, we are going through the administration that we are going to look at the administration to revise the program of our next quarter, and also factor in through the administration protocol, the host chair, in terms of our oversight, where can we just have our oversight, and that will be communicated to members. The actors will continue acting until further notice, as powers may be. And with that, that concludes the business of the day. Have a good break. Those who are going to break, and God bless.
Yeah, I think you were voted here. I can't. tell DM that was arranged and then...
I feel it's going to meet with you tomorrow.
Oh, great, great, yeah, yeah. Because you can see it's now going to be political or plain change. Finance must do it, business must do it, why are you not doing it? And put it the person who told the person was not in the meeting when we responded.
Did they
want to take responsibility?
But because you're not working to check on the role of
Christians. Yeah, yes, yes. No, thanks for coming there, like you said.
What are you doing?
Thank you.